All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? Do you guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars?
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have Amigo Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis.
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want. Wow!
This is Big Kev's Geek Stuff, episode 59. This show must go on, and I'm Big Kevin. Is that's what we call him, right?
Sure.
Big Kevin. No, Big Kev is not with us tonight.
I was going to say, you lost a little bit more than blood last time, I think, from your brain.
I miss him. I haven't seen him in a while.
Aw.
So where is Big Kev?
Big Kev is currently involved with some sort of wacky, crazy, hippie theater product.
Cosplay.
Yeah, cosplay. That's it.
Okay.
With hippies and music.
But he's not dressed up as a pirate?
Not that I know of. That's a couple weeks away still. We'll
he's
get
not
there.
Dressed up as a knight?
Not yet.
Okay.
You never know, though. We may get there. It's
he's
only a couple weeks away.
A live-action Dr. Seuss, isn't he?
He is. He is thing number two.
So what's going on today, Matt?
I don't know what is going on today. It's kind of quiet this week, you know, coming off of an exciting, invigorating Memorial Day weekend. The news was kind of light. Saw a couple of movies, read a couple of things, but you know.
I saw a couple movies myself.
We'll get to that.
And by that I mean one movie.
Probably the same movie I saw twice.
Although there was so much content and it was so long, I might as well have seen two.
We'll get there.
We will.
We will get there. But let's go with what I have for tonight, because it's quick and we can get through it, I think. So we know that there's a Street Fighter film coming out. We heard about this, although briefly, we heard that they were working on it. And I remember we all cried a little bit because, you know, the first one was atrocious.
Oh my God, was that bad.
I mean, it was so bad. And how could you possibly do a second one without Raul Julia alive to reprise his role as Bison?
As M. Bison.
That's what I'm saying.
I can't even begin to say, I mean, if people have seen it, they know how bad it is.
Uh-huh.
But if you tried to explain to someone how bad it is, it would be impossible. You can start with saying that Jean-Claude Van Damme plays Lieutenant Guile.
Right.
And the story revolves around Guile, the American, as opposed
right.
to the traditional story of Street Fighter and Street Fighter 2 and into Street Fighter 3 of Ken and Ryu, or Ryu, how you like to pronounce it if you're a Westerner. And that's all I'll say. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
That's why maybe they're making a movie, because they figure, well, it can't be as bad as the first one.
Maybe it's kind of like Marvel's Hulk 2 or Hulk redo. This is the Street Fighter redo. But that's actually not what I want
to
talk about.
That's what came to mind for me, too. So what do you want to talk about?
What I want to talk about is the same group of writing goons, and I'm calling them goons,
okay,
that are working on the Street Fighter film, are also working on a live-action, and brace yourself for this one,
yeah,
He-Man film.
Is there a loincloth involved?
The description I've heard so far is 300, but for kids. So yes, Potentially.
So it's completely inappropriate.
Although, from what I remember, yeah, completely inappropriate. But from what I remember, I don't think he wore a loincloth. Wasn't it like furry underwear?
I thought that was a loincloth. Well, I guess it's how you interpret the animated version of him or the plastic version of him.
Okay.
But yeah, it looked like fur to me. Yeah. And it had the fur around his boots, and he was a barbarian with blonde hair.
Right. And
but, he was handsome. Okay, so what else do you know about this?
That's all there is that's out there so far. The announcement was made in a couple of trade publications that it is a project that's being developed by the same writing team that's bringing us Street Fighter.
Right.
And so we have nothing to get excited about as far as I'm
concerned. Wasn't there one in the 80s, right? In the mid-80s, there was the Dolph Lundgren,
Masters of the Universe.
Right. And Burgess Meredith was Skeletor, right?
Yes, I believe
I think so.
I think so.
If he wasn't, it was a guy who sounded a lot like Burgess Meredith. Okay. That wasn't that bad.
You know what? That one was almost acceptable, but you have to look at that one as a campy kind of throwback to, well, I guess now it's a throwback, but when it was made, it wasn't a throwback. But it really is kind of a campy sort of cross-genre of horror versus science fiction versus just camp, just all-out camp.
Yeah.
And if they did it that way again, maybe it would have a redeeming quality. But I have a feeling that the approach is going to be much more attempt at realism.
Oh, I see. So Orko is real.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, but you know what I mean? It's going to be another hack children's fantasy popcorn, bubblegum piece of film.
You know what's interesting? I think in the 80s, they still weren't ready to accept geek culture to say that this is a movie about Masters of the Universe and start in the Eternia universe.
Right.
And that they had to use that plot device that they used in the D&D animated series, and that the kids somehow cross over to this other universe.
Right.
And I don't know about the lore of Eternia and the lore of Masters of the Universe and whether or not it's actually a parallel universe to another, or they're just using this as a plot device. But I feel like today, They're probably much more comfortable just doing it straight up, you know, starting out in the fantasy world of Eternia and not having to explain, you know, there's kids living on Earth and they find something and it creates a rift. And I think that's a signal that even He-Man, something as silly and as campy as He-Man, is kind of, you know, rode the mainstream wave to acceptance.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just
you hate it either way.
I do. I just think it's going to be terrible. I think even though I was a fan of the animated series, I think it works well as an animated series. I think it's when you try to transfer it to live action that you're going to run into problems. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just the look of the creatures and the feel of them is so ridiculous and over the top at times that if you try to bring it to life and even make it slightly real, I guess it could be good, maybe. I think the part that's bothering me is the kiddie-izing of it, the aiming it at that real young audience. Because then what happens is, instead of going from maybe quality CGI work, you go to kind of goofy prosthetics. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just, they're going to get like John Rhys-Davies to play Ram Man or something. And who the... Yeah,
they could.
Yeah, they could. It really is the Gimli outfit, just different color.
He could be with a giant metal helmet.
Yeah,
he could be like 80 years old and he's still playing parts where, you know, it doesn't really require you to move your real legs.
Exactly.
You can just kind of hang out on your knees.
So,
he 80 years old? I don't know.
No. As much as I'd love to see Trapjaw on the big screen, I just don't think that it's going to be good. I just don't.
Okay, what else you got? Right.
So we'll move out of that and we'll move into something I am excited about. I think I am falling into the minority with this, but I don't care. I'm always in the minority when it comes to this stuff. Dark Knight. We have yet another snippet of legitimate Joker shots that have surfaced.
Mm-hmm.
They surfaced online and they surfaced in USA Today, which also lends credence to their credibility.
Right.
First of all, I'd like to say for all of you naysayers who don't believe that Harvey Dent 2 website was real, it is real. There's no doubt about it. It's a legitimate thing. It wasn't hacked. It wasn't some cheap site that someone set up on GoDaddy, because that rumor is going around. It is legitimate. I'm pretty positive it's
I never confirmed. Doubted you for a second.
Well, you know, some people did.
I just want to let you know I got your back.
Good.
Okay. So what are we actually looking here at these pictures?
We're looking at two individual shots. The first shot is two gentlemen in regular-looking suits, but with these really played-up clown masks on.
Mm-hmm.
And these represent the gang, Joker's gang of goons, if you will.
Okay.
Not the goon, not Bob the goon.
Damn it.
Although, Anthony Michael Hall. Maybe.
Greatest action figure. That Bob the Goon action figure.
I think he's in this studio somewhere. He is. He's
hit a button either on his ass crack or on his back. You pushed and he just kicked, I think.
Kicked, yeah. He
came with a gun. That made him a cool action figure at the time.
Because he came with a gun.
Yeah, he came with a gun.
And it wasn't a joke gun. It wasn't like a Joker
gun.
No, it was
a real gun.
Or
it was like,
fist.
We need to shoot somebody. Bring in Bob the Goon.
Yeah.
He's got the gun.
It was pretty good.
So two guys in suits and plastic
and clown masks. That's that.
Right.
And then there's another blurry shot of Heath Ledger as the Joker. The importance of that picture is it again confirms the green hair, which has been brought to question several times. He clearly has green hair. You can't see much of his facial structure. I mean, you could tell it's Heath Ledger and it's definitely the Joker, but you could clearly see that he has the green hair. So that's pretty important. The other important thing is that it's being filmed and shot on 70mm IMAX cameras.
Yeah, I saw that on the photos, had IMAX in the label, and
yeah.
I'm thinking, I don't get it. So what's it mean?
No one's quite sure, because I don't know how they do a conversion from the IMAX format to the standard theatrical release.
Look, I got to be honest, I've never even seen anything in IMAX. So how does it work when you go to a regular IMAX, and it's a regular movie? Is it a different version of the movie that they put up on the screen? Is it the IMAX version
there,
or is it the regular version? Like,
it is the IMAX version.
Stretched.
They have
something
to do several things to it to get it to IMAX. First of all, they change the aspect ratio,
mm-hmm.
which is why if you go and see something in IMAX that's been previously theatrically released,
right.
it's almost like watching it in full screen because they stretch it out to fit the IMAX screen,
right.
and so you lose anything going on in the peripheral.
Ooh, does it suck?
Well...
Sounds like it sucks to me.
You know what? If you really want to see, Mannequin Skywalker six stories tall, then it's kind of cool, I guess.
Okay.
But anything going on the side, you lose.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to see Harry Potter pointing his wand at your head, but the wand is bigger than like four of you wide, then it's kind of cool, but you lose anything in the peripherals.
Right.
So it really is like watching full screen on a giant screen.
So what about the ones that are made specifically for IMAX? Those got to be cool then.
Those have nothing cut out because they're made for the right aspect ratio.
Okay.
Not only that, but I think they take advantage of the technology a lot more. I think you get a better feel for it. The quality is a lot crisper and it's a better transfer. Really, I think what they end up doing is they transfer the film from the theater to the 70mm IMAX. If you've never been to an IMAX theater, if you go into any one of them, one of the things you can do is when you're leaving, you can actually walk past the projector room,
mm-hmm.
and the reels have to be like 5 feet across. I mean, they're just gigantic. They're huge, huge film reels.
Uh-huh.
So
So what do you think this is about these Joker screens having IMAX strewn in there?
I don't know because that's how the scenes are being filmed. It's four scenes that are being filmed that way. And there was nothing in what I've read so far that indicates that they're being filmed both ways. It can mean one of two things. It can mean that they found some sort of way to work the technology into there, and maybe there's some sort of distortion on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the Joker scenes maybe will be slightly visually distorted and will kind of play on the character that way.
Yeah, I could see
that. That's one thing.
Okay.
Or the other thing is that they're Supermaning it, in that the four big scenes that they're shooting are going to be the four scenes that are special IMAX 3D.
My money's on that one.
That's because the other way is way too creative and possibly interesting for it to be legitimate. So my money is on that one too.
Okay.
But that's where it is. So I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe it'll be the first movie that I ever see in IMAX. Probably not.
I think the last movie I saw in IMAX was Fantasia 2000. That might have been it.
Okay.
But that was made for IMAX, I think. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay.
So that's it. Movie news was pretty quiet this week otherwise.
But what about that other movie?
What other movie?
The movie that I saw.
We'll get to that.
Oh my God.
We're going to talk about that and something that was before that.
The whole time I was watching, I was thinking to myself, I got to tell Matt this. I got to talk to Matt about this. I know he loves it.
I do, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
All right, I'll hold my horses.
I'm going to play Kevin for a minute. I'm going to tell you about DVDs that came out this week that nobody's going to fucking care about.
Oh, man. Okay, I'm going to play me, and I'm not going to care.
Hannibal Rising.
Now, that one, I don't care about that one. Okay.
In my notes, I actually wrote Hannibal Rising, who cares?
No.
Because, really, I don't think anybody cares. I think the book was pretty good, from what I hear. I know Thomas Harris was pretty happy with the book, and most of the fans of the series were happy with the book. But the film itself did not do well. There was not a huge audience for it. I don't think it did great box office numbers. And as a matter of fact, the DVD releases that I've seen, it's grouped together with like another campy horror movie for $19.99, because I think they think the only way that they can move this at the same price is to give you two for the price of one.
Yeah, it's weird for having, you know, the first one became a film classic.
It is a film classic.
And the new ones, I don't even know are there two or three additional ones that are kind of like either prequels or sequels?
There are Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Then there's Hannibal. Silence of the Lambs is good. Most people will tell you Hannibal was meh. I kind of liked it, but most people will tell you it sucked. Then there was Red Dragon.
Right.
Which was actually a prequel, but had Hannibal in it.
Okay.
But it didn't focus on Hannibal as the main character. That was really good again.
And that's it, right?
And then there's this one, Hannibal Rising. So there's four total.
There's four. All right.
And then technically there's a fifth one, because there was that movie made, Manhunter, way back when, and I think it came out after Silence of the Lambs, but before Hannibal, and it was the same story that's told in Red Dragon. It was a prequel story to Silence of the Lambs.
I see.
And it didn't have Anthony Hopkins in the role of Hannibal. So, yeah, who cares? Go buy it if you really want, but I don't think it's going to sell that well, to be honest with you.
Well, what do you know? The DVD release was interesting, at least because I got to learn about the history of it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got something out of it. I didn't get anything out of it.
That's why I come here.
No, whatever.
That and to push this red button.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Push the button. Okay. Celebration 4 happened this week. For those of you that don't know, Celebration 4 is the big, huge, gigantic, ginormous geek fest out in Los Angeles, California that celebrates Star Wars each and every year. Well, at least for the past 4 years. It was huge again. There was tons and tons of people there. It's held in LA each year. Plenty of stormtroopers walking around. Elvis Stormtrooper with his exclusive bust that we talked about last week. I saw some definite pictures online of Burger King Stormtrooper. So we know he was there. But
man, the Burger King character's a hit.
He is. Well,
you'd stick that head on any character.
And it'd be popular.
Seriously.
I'd like to see it on, I don't know, maybe on like Doctor Doom or Spider-Man, perhaps. Working into a Marvel film, maybe. But one of the biggest things to come out of Celebration 4, in my personal opinion at least, I wasn't there, but from what I can see.
I was.
Were you? Was it fun?
No.
You lying bastard.
I did watch the G4 thing, but I'll tell you about that.
You'll tell me after about it in a minute?
Yeah.
We'll get to the game section in a moment. The biggest thing to come out of it, at least in my opinion, was the trailer for Clone Wars, which is the upcoming CGI cartoon animated series that's scheduled to come out early next year, later this year, sometime in that range, fourth quarter, first quarter, somewhere in there. For those of you who haven't seen the trailer, you can go to starwars.com and find the trailer. You can also go to rebelscum.com and scroll down about a page or so, and you'll find it posted on there.
Right.
Most of the people that I know that saw it, or that I showed it to that hadn't seen it first, thought it was CGI cutscenes for a new game. Because that's what it looks like.
Does it look like... Okay, it looks like CGI cutscenes. So it doesn't look like really good in-game gameplay.
No.
It doesn't look like some of the newer games that are coming out that have almost photorealistic graphics. It looks like it's pre-rendered, obviously, because it's an animated series. Does it look good? Does it look good enough?
It does. The characterizations look good. I think the only character I had a huge problem with was Anakin. He looks... he looks kind of small and skinny. Smaller and skinnier than he actually is even in the movies.
Right. So what was the name of that animated series that they did in two parts?
It was Clone Wars.
That was called Clone Wars as well?
It was.
So this is going to be called Clone Wars 2.
As far as I know.
But it would be... Was it going to be number 3?
No. Also. Not
also.
Two.
Correct. Yes.
T-O-O, not T-W-O.
Right. Is it going to be an extension, same story going forward?
It's possible. I mean, most of the same characters are involved. It does take place in the same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it takes place between episodes 2 and 3, Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith. You know, you have Anakin in there still as Anakin and Yoda, and you have that female Jedi whose name I can never, female Sith rather, whose name I can never remember, but she was made popular in the animated series. General Grievous is in it.
Yeah. Okay.
The Unleashed figure that no one ever bought.
Oh, I've seen that one on the shelves all the time.
The bald one, the gray with the big.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks good. It looks all right. Personally, I like the stylized animated series a lot better. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of 3D shows.
You know, I mean, I wish that there were more of them.
Or CGI, I should say.
Maybe. Yeah, I know what you mean. But I wish that there were more of them done with the quality that the Pixar ones are done with that were adult oriented. You know, there was that what's the Heinlein book? Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
There was the Starship Troopers one a couple years back.
Uh-huh. And Roughnecks.
Roughnecks. And the story was good. It was all right. I mean,
but
it was kind of it was more like the book than it was like the movie.
Right.
But there were some weird things in the animation and, you know, some of the rendering that just kind of made you think like it killed the suspension of disbelief for you at points, and you had to kind of get yourself back into it to get over it.
Well, the Roughnecks didn't have a true CGI feel to it. It kind of had that choppy blocky CGI. It was weird. This is closer to like what you would see in Pixar or mm-hmm. Shrek, even, just not quite as good. And I think that's where my problem is. It's the same thing that you have. I think that if they took maybe the financial backing to put as much quality into it, then the show would be good, or it would at least look good. But they don't, because it's made for television and the budget is obviously a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And it suffers. It would just serve better as a regular animated series.
So let me ask you something, because I'm uninformed here.
Okay.
This is not the live action series that they've been talking about.
This is different.
All right. So there is going to be something else after this as well.
There is. 2009 is the live action series.
Okay.
We don't have a lot of information on it. I was scouring everything online that I could find to see if there was any news about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't find anything yet. There's still plenty of time because it's just getting over. So I'm sure we'll find out something eventually, but nothing that I've seen yet really points in that direction. So
that's the one I'm excited for.
That's the one I'm excited for. Provided they treat it right. I'm concerned about how they're going to do it. I think the way they need to do it is to not use any of the main characters.
I could see them bringing back Mark Hamill, though, for something. Is it going to be a, you know, post-episode 6 story?
I don't think they've confirmed the storyline yet. I think they just know that it's live action, and that's about it. Maybe they can bring in Mark Hamill for, like, a cameo here or there. Maybe if it's, like, some young Jedi, and eventually he meets Luke because he's mm-hmm. going, like, to the Jedi Academy or something like that. That would be great. That would be kind of cool. But I don't want to see another story focusing around these characters that I know. What I want to see is the Star Wars universe in its full, but with other characters, to get another feel or a different feel for that universe. The universe is so rich with so many different, I don't want to say character types because you don't want to classify it as a game, but really it's what they are. I mean, it's character types and groups and aliens and all that stuff. That's what I want to see. That's what I hope they do with it, but who knows? It's Lucas, so, you know, he'll turn it into like The Passion of the Christ 2 somehow, and, you know, it'll become way too religious for its own good. So there's that.
Yeah.
Also coming out of Celebration, so more Star Wars news then, in the toy world, we do have news of at least one more 7-inch Unleashed figure, which I know Kev will be very excited for. It's kind of a shame he's not here. Tough. I don't care. Bastard. Anyway, they're doing an ARC Trooper. It's another retooling, another repaint of the Clone Trooper 7-inch Unleashed that had already come out.
Oh, I didn't know that. I saw the picture, and I never saw this one. Does he have the same weapon in his hand? The other guy has a Gatling gun?
No. Because the ARC Trooper's gun is totally different.
Okay.
The regular Clone Trooper, if I remember correctly, he's red and he actually is probably in the studio somewhere too. He's red and white. He's got the red stripe on the helmet and he's got his regular gun and he's standing on top of another fallen Clone Trooper who might just be all white, but I don't remember.
I think he's got a little color in there, but he's definitely dead.
Yeah. So this one is just really a retooling of that one. Again, a reissue. It looks good. It's nice to know that they're still attempting to do something with the Unleashed line. I mean, I guess if you're going to do something, probably your biggest seller is any of the troopers, because there are huge army builders out there that will buy them en masse.
Yeah.
Again, it's probably a money-saving scheme, too, because you don't have to do a completely new figure. I mean, really, on this one, you have to change the head sculpt, the weapon base, and probably the hands for the new weapon. But overall, I think the body shape and size is the same. I mean, they're all the same size. They are clones, after all. So, so there was that coming out of it. Again, Hasbro, I hope they continue the line. I mean, I'd like to see them do new characters, but... I guess it's better.
I thought
to have
this line was dead.
Nothing. Well, it was supposed to be dead,
but it's just too good.
Well, they sell well. They sell well, but they do them as exclusives. Like this one is going to be a Diamond exclusive, and it's going to be available to select online retailers. So Diamond will probably distribute a certain number of them to like specialty shops and comic book shops. So like Hot Topic and Suncoast, places like that carry Diamond product will get some. But you'll probably also see them pop up at, you know, your local comic book store and stuff like that. Most definitely you'll see them online somewhere, probably Entertainment Earth or Time and Space Toys or one of those places. That
cool.
Sell them.
They're cool.
Yeah, they are. They're pretty good. Also coming from Diamond, which I'm only half excited about. I should be a lot more excited than I am, but I'm not. From that movie that I love all too much, based on that television series, that I'm not going to mention.
The Secret of NIMH.
That's it.
No, that's not. I don't think that's based on a television show.
No, it's not. From Serenity, we have Diamond Select doing an Inara statue. For those of you who don't know, Inara was the companion played by Marina Baccarin in the television series and film. She's the space whore, if you will. So I should be really excited because it's more product coming from something that I love so much and I want to see them continue. The problem that I have is that I absolutely hate the sculpt.
I saw this too, and I didn't even recognize
it. It looks like shit.
You know, I saw the weapon, and she has a very distinct weapon that makes you see the weapon and say, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah.
Even if she didn't have a face or had a hood on or whatever. And I was still thinking to myself, who the hell is that?
It's just, you know, I've seen some of the stuff that Diamond puts out. I know some of the sculptors that they've had working over there for some of their Marvel busts and statues, even for some of the Buffy stuff that they have coming out. I mean, they have the ability to do really good sculpts, to do really good likeness rights. And I don't know who the dude that's sculpting this is, and no offense to you, but I think it's terrible. I think it's terrible. I think it's like a cross between some sort of bizarre photorealism and animated style. Like it's stylized and generic and nothing about it screams Inara with a few exceptions.
You know what I didn't get? And this could have been just the picture that I was looking at, but it looked wet. You know when after a paint job, it looks like it has a coat of varnish on it?
Right.
Rather than hair or skin or blood or whatever it's meant to be. It looked kind of wet to me. And that makes me think that it's made of cheaper materials or has a cheap paint job and then they varnish it or something like that. But that could just be the angle and the light and the camera that in that particular photo.
I would hope that if that's the case, and it's possible because I wouldn't be entirely surprised, but if that's the case, I'd be really surprised because the price point on this is looking like it's in the $100 to $125 range. So it's not a cheap statue.
My eyes must be playing tricks on me.
Yeah, it could be, but it's disappointing.
I ain't buying no wet statue for $135.
And actually, you know what? They have another statue that's coming out soon. It's already been solicited, so it should be hitting any time now. It's the River Triumphant statue,
which I
think is really good.
Yeah.
Again, the likeness isn't spot on, but it's pretty good. And just everything about the statue, it's really dynamic, and I think it's well painted, and that one is worth the price tag that follows it. That one is one that I'd want for my collection. This one, I just don't care. I'm just,
I'm sorry. They'll come out with more, I promise.
I hope so.
I promise.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go on to some video game stuff then. I want to move past Inara. She disappoints me.
I like games. Let's do it.
Okay. I want to mention, although I don't have it yet, that Mario Party 8 came out this week for the Wii. For those of you who are fans of Mario Party in the past, it's definitely a fun game. It definitely leads credence to the Wii system, which is definitely a party system. And I'm going to be interested to see how the gameplay works.
Yeah, there's no gimmicks on this one, right? I mean, other than the fact that you use the Wii remote. There's no, it doesn't come with any pack-ins. There's no,
I don't think so.
No, like a vibrator that you hook up to your balls and you get penalized by electric shock or anything?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
You didn't play that one, huh?
No. I must have missed that version. Was that Mario Party X?
That was Mario Party XXX.
Oh, hey now.
My feeling about Mario Party is that it's kind of level off and become stagnant, though. I think it's stagnated. I mean, it was a really fun game, and right. I guess around, I think people think that 2 or 3, I could be mistaken. I've played them all once,
mm-hmm.
but I think that people generally consider those to be the best. I had 7 for GameCube. It came with a mic, cheap.
Right.
And it was fun, but it wasn't. It's not a home run. It's like a 6.5, 7 at the max.
Yeah. Like I said, I think the only benefit to this game for this system, at the very least, is that it is a party type game,
yeah.
and it goes along with that whole Wii mentality. I don't know that it's going to be great or not. I don't know how they're going to work the Wii technology in there, if they are at all. But you know, it might be a rental. It might be a game I look into renting or borrowing from somebody else that picks it up.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about the Wii is if you get a lot of people around. You have a big screen and a little bit of open space, and I stress the need for open space. It's fun, no matter what. I mean, the dumbest games on it are fun. If you play WarioWare, there's a whole bunch of mini games that are point and click, and you just shoot at cans and rockets that come at your face and stuff. And the premise is so simple, but you can kind of sit there for a really long time and play. It's like one of those snood type games that you realize, oh my god, I've been doing this for like an hour and a half. I have to continue the rest of my life. But, I wanted to let you know, if you ever really wanted a fun game that you would never thought would be fun, pick up WarioWare.
Okay.
You're having a party. You got those red cups and everybody's drinking and you get 12 people in front of the screen, big 42 plus inch screen. The weird thing is you'd think that there were some kind of 4-player simultaneous mode, but there isn't.
Okay.
There's multiplayer modes, but they all require you to pass the remote in some way. Now, you can create Miis on the Wii that resemble all of your friends, or you can give your friend Michael Jackson if you happen to make Michael Jackson.
Right.
And when it's their turn, it calls their name, and you have to find them. Now, when you're all drunk and there's 12 people standing in front of the 42-inch TV in your parents' hallway, it gets wild. And there's a lot of banging into each other and screaming, and where the fuck is Matt? A lot of that going on.
Right.
So, it's an unexpectedly good time.
All right, so I'll have to check that out. Although I'm hesitant to involve the red beer cups because it's funny you should bring those up. But I had an unfortunate Wii beer experience this past weekend that involved bowling.
Okay.
And a red cup filled with beer. And a now non-working Wii remote.
No, really?
And some beer on a television screen. So
So the only thing is, did the beer come off? Like, did it get all sticky and grimy, were you able to get it off?
It came off the screen, but the remote's kind of funky.
So all's well.
Mostly that's fine. It wasn't my remote, I'm happy to say.
Oh, my God.
But it was a friend's remote.
All right.
I am a little sad to say that it may have to be retired.
I'm just going
to
say that you are over 18 years of age.
Yes, I am 19 years of age, so I am just perfect.
And the Wii is 10. Still fun, despite all the bright colors and rounded corners.
It is.
All right.
Just on a personal Wii update, I have a Super Paper Mario update. I'm still playing. I know I'm slow. I'm behind like the rest of the universe when it comes to this
game. You haven't
beaten
this? It's a freaking kids game.
I know. But I'm getting really aggravated by it.
Yeah.
Some of the things just take way too long. Not load times. Uh-huh. Just little in-game sequences that really I just don't care about. That I wish there was a fast-forward button.
Yeah, when that happens, you get a kid and you're like, look at this. Look how fun this is. And you give it to them. They do that part. You know the part where you have to die like 100 times just to figure out which way you're supposed to go in the maze because you got the glowing bramble berries and they're running out and it's too dark, Legend of Carandia.
Right.
And you give it to the kid, he figures it out, and then you walk over, you're like, oh, that's cool. And you just rip it out of his hand, kick him in the head, and say, now you sit while I play the fun part.
And you go on your merry way.
Yeah, that's fine. That happens.
Good. All right.
Strategy guide. That's what that's called.
Is that what it's called? Let's get away from console games for a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's get on to serious gaming. Serious gaming for sick children.
Okay.
Cigna Healthcare. Some of you may or may not know.
No, I don't know.
Healthcare at all.
Okay.
Is developing a game that you could play on your computer or DVD player.
Oh, well, this is going to be great.
Oh, it's a killer.
Okay.
Literally.
What?
For cancer. Kids with cancer.
Oh, so it's like the America's Army game.
Yes, kind of, sort of.
But instead of training yourself for war, you condition
kill
yourself
cancer
for cancer.
Cells.
Oh, you kill them. Okay. Thank
you. You play Roxy, a brunette nanobot with a blaster for a left arm. And you carefully take aim at cancer cells and zap them into oblivion.
Now, I was going to rag on this, but you have a nanobot left arm?
Apparently.
So you're using nanotechnology to combat cancer?
I guess so.
That's exciting.
That is pretty exciting.
In a way. I mean, come
sure.
on. If I had cancer, I want some freaking nanomites in there getting rid of it.
And you know what?
And you never know with the way things are going for me. Okay.
And this is no three That's or four level game. There are 20 action-packed levels for this game.
Right.
So if you have cancer or know someone that does.
Does it say who it's developed by or published by or in conjunction with, any of those things? It very well may not. I'm just curious.
Hope Lab in Redwood City, California.
Oh, you are a man of answers.
So, yeah. So, you know, you can check that out. You can go to Cigna.com/remission and check that out.
Cool.
No, not really.
It's all right.
Thought I should bring it up. Well, what I do want to bring up.
Yeah.
In the technology section of today's show, which can kind of lead into the game section.
Because we're a tech show.
Sometimes, yeah. When Kev's not here, because he's afraid of technology.
Hey, geeks like tech.
Except for Kev. The Surface, the Microsoft Surface.
What the hell's that?
Come on. Don't fuck with me, Fantastic.
It's like a 30-inch table.
Ginormous.
Screen on a table.
Right.
It's multi-touch, meaning that you can stick your finger on it, and it'll pick up where your finger is, but you can also put the other 9 fingers down on it, and your head, and your forehead, and your whole body, and it'll detect that it's being touched in all those areas.
Correct.
And it's not really an amazing product launch, but it is a pretty big announcement for Microsoft because of the possibilities that, you know, this thing could be used for.
Well,
it has a lot of potential.
Let's just say that this is not meant for the general consumer at launch.
Although I want one.
We all want one.
Right.
But with a price tag of, like, I think it's somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000.
Yo, leave it up to Microsoft to make something that's so cool.
Yeah.
Everyone wants one and you can't get one.
Well, I will say that in the press release they said that within the next 4 or 5 years I suspect the price point to come down considerably.
Yo.
So there's that. But this is being used right now for, like, in-store displays. The example they give in the press release is for T-Mobile.
Yeah, it's going to be in T-Mobile stores.
The thing we didn't mention about it, that in addition to this touchscreen, it also has somewhere between 4 or 5 mounted cameras below the screen.
Right.
That can read barcodes on select products.
Right. I don't know what else they can read, but I'm thinking that if the thing does video chat, it's going to be a lot more intuitive, granted, talking into your table, but talking into the screen of the table rather than talking to a camera that, even in the most optimal position, is at the top of the screen.
Right.
Which means that you never really are looking at the person that you're talking to.
No.
Over voice chat.
Right.
So that's cool.
And what they plan on doing with it in T-Mobile stores, for example, is that you can walk into a T-Mobile store and you can pick up, let's say, the latest Sidekick off of their little display table, and you could take it and you could put it on top of this thing and it will read the barcode.
Right.
And it will populate the screen with all sorts of information about the Sidekick, and then it will be fully interactive. So using the touchscreen features, you can scroll through different options. You can open up different windows.
Right.
And
you can learn more about the phone using a menu that seems to have stemmed from the phone itself on the screen.
Right. And everything is touch-based.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you open up a window, you can resize windows. I mean, like, using...
Yeah,
you
do everything very, very, using gestures. You grab, you know, you can grab the picture. If you pull your hands apart, it will make it larger. You bring them together, make it smaller. You can twirl things around, rotate the pictures. Did you hear the one about the digital camera? That if you put the digital camera down, the pictures just kind of like spill out onto the table.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It pulls all the images right off and it dumps them on the desktop for you to work with. You can resize, crop, do some real minor photo editing on it.
Right.
I don't know what kind of save, I don't know what kind of hard drive it has or how you pull the information off.
From what I've read, it's a full-blown Windows Vista PC.
Oh, okay.
I mean, what does that tell you since there's five SKUs of Vista? Maybe this is the sixth. This is, you know, Windows Vista
Surface?
Surface Edition.
Right.
Probably.
The thing that this made me think of at first, when I first saw it and read it, was, you know, watching plenty of sci-fi television shows, you know, whenever they have like a medical bay in the sci-fi TV show, you know, like they put the person on the operating table and the computer pulls up this like 3D holographic image of the person or like their internal organs.
Yeah.
And they're like spinning the body and moving stuff around and like searching for, that's like the first, that's where the touchscreen application first went in my mind. And I was like, wow, it's kind of neat to see some of these things in their beginning stages. You know, this is where that's going to develop from.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at it the same way, too, because I've seen a couple MIT lectures and things like that about multi-touch that are very interesting.
Right.
That are maybe 2 or 3 years old now, at max 3.5 that I've known about them. And this is the first commercial application where Microsoft is actually putting together a product and making it available for people who are willing to pay for it.
Right.
Hotels.
Oh, yes. That's another thing.
You know, stores to do displays. Well, the one I can think of is I was in the Samsung store, and I believe it's in Washington Square in New York, and they have a really crappy heat reactive touch display there where you can kind of like mess with these flowers and you touch them and they flutter around when you like smack them. Some of the applications that are just kind of like abstract artistic things that you can do with the Surface are way in advance of that. You know, you can dip your finger in a pot of virtual paint, and then you can bring it over to the, you know, another area on the tablet and just start drawing, finger painting. It's got some really cool applications that I don't think anyone has thought of yet out there too.
I see the progression of this as going from hotels and stores and stuff like that. I think the next spot you'll see it probably will be in schools. Even if it's only one or something like that for creative learning or whatever like that. And then eventually you'll see it come to the consumer. Us, the regular consumer.
And let me ask you something, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Where do you want it?
Where do I want it to go?
Answer that cleanly.
Yeah, well, I want it in my house.
No, because I know the way you think and I know the way I think. Remember when we were talking about Legos with guns and all that stuff? This is a no-brainer, too, here. I mean, it is the greatest $10,000 to $15,000...
game system ever.
Gaming table, game
ever.
System,
I mean,
game whatever.
The potential is just... The potential is just huge for gaming, for any kind of gaming. Even the simplest types of game, you know, would work on it. But I could even see the most advanced types of games... having applications. I mean, where your hand becomes the mouse and I don't know. I think it's pretty exciting.
Well, you can play like an air hockey game.
Yeah.
You know, on there. Where you're using your hand as the
paddle.
The paddle. You knock a little puck around and bounce it off the sides. But then you could also do things, you know, you can play chess and things like that on it. Those are no-brainers. You know, you got
Solitaire.
Old arcade-style games that, you know, they'll port over. But also you got like tabletop games that, you know, either grid-based or Warhammer style that use standard measurements, or D&D when you have, like, you can be walking through a dungeon and moving your little miniatures around on top.
Yeah, I mean...
It would be awesome.
The applications are just... I mean, if you actually reach a point where there's, like, developer software, which I'm sure there will be...
Oh, yeah.
You can really just do anything with it. I mean, tabletop gaming is going to go to a whole new level with this. I don't know. I'm excited.
Microsoft is great for developers. If, you know, if they're good at one thing, it's definitely making their APIs and their libraries and their products open to third-party developers, and that's a strength for them. Picture this. Your pirates game.
Right.
With the boats and the ships and the islands and the sea monsters. And you put your little ship down, and when you move it forward, not only does it keep track of the distance for you, you have beautiful waves of 3D water moving around. That's awesome. You fire your cannons. You point to the ship you want. You hear the sound. You see the cannonballs fly over. It would be awesome.
I do. I really do. I think I think that this is really going to take that type of gaming to the next level. I mean, that's the geek application. That's it. That's where it's going. I mean, eventually they'll develop technology and games specifically made for it that don't require tabletop stuff that already exists. But I don't know. I think it's a good step for Microsoft. I think it's a huge step as far as computing goes, and it's something definitely refreshing and a little bit different.
Yeah, I only hope that this product is as big as it can be, and is bigger than the iPod was for, you know, revolutionizing digital music. I think that this can revolutionize computing, say in the living room or in the kitchen or right. in living spaces. You know, social computing. I think it's got, you know, I think it's going to be great.
Well, it's funny because they actually called it the Surface coffee table. In one of the articles or releases that I was reading today, because it almost kind of looks like a little coffee table. Yeah. So, you know, even if when you think about it, as we're starting to connect all of our entertainment features together, I mean, it even can become the centerpiece of your entertainment system. You can control your TV from it,
yeah.
or you can control your electronic lighting from it, or you know, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's huge. I think it's going to be a huge in-home piece. A piece of software and hardware once it gets friendly enough for us to buy.
If any of you listeners out there see these things popping up, please drop us a line.
Yeah.
What's our email address?
It's bigkevsgeekstuff@gmail.com.
Okay. Kev checks that all the time, right?
No. Well, I mean, yes. Every day he checks it.
Every day. But awesome.
He normally signs all of the emails, Matt, but I assure you he checks it every day.
He's living two lives.
Yeah, he is living two lives. I think we're going to take a quick break here.
I need a break. It's freaking hot in here.
It is a little toasty.
Mercury rising.
Damn it.
Didn't we have an episode called that?
No, but that's a good one. We'll save that for August.
Hey, this is Mr. Fantastic. It's time for the fans of Big Kev's Geek Stuff to get interactive with the show. And there are many ways to do this. You can visit us at myspace.com/BigKevsGeekStuff or come talk to me about my G.I. Joe and Star Wars action figures at the forums found at BigKevsGeekStuff.com/forum. Drop us a line or leave us a review on the iTunes store by searching for Geek Stuff under podcasts. And if you want to hear more of Big Kev's Geek Stuff live on XM Satellite Radio, drop him a line at eric.logan@xmradio.com.
And we are back with Big Matt's Geek Stuff.
Oh, man.
The show must go on. No, he can't be here, but that doesn't mean we can't. Yeah, we have to stop.
This is Mr. Fantastic's Hot Stuff.
There you go. All right.
That's what I'd call it.
Yeah?
It'll be all hot. All nude all the time.
Hey now, I don't want anything to do with that podcast.
Well, you guys
are
going to
be
Radio
show, new. Whatever it is.
All right.
Jeez, I completely lost my train of thought now. Where are we going with this?
Well, I know where.
Well, then go ahead. You know where. Smarty Pants.
It's Pirates 3.
It is Pirates
Matthias.
3. Let me start off with some box office numbers for you. Because I think we should address those.
Okay, I'm going to be sick by this.
Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, the third film, broke the opening weekend record with $404 million over 6 days. It opened up in 16 countries and busted the opening record in all of those countries, including Argentina, Iceland, Russia, Malaysia, and Taiwan.
Wow.
About the only thing it wasn't able to break, it would seem, was the regular 3-day opening weekend of Spider-Man 3.
What a shame.
Spider-Man 3 pulled in $151.1 million in the first 3 days. And Pirates of the Caribbean 3 at World's End pulled in $139.8 million.
I saw it on Sunday night. Did I contribute to any of those numbers?
You did.
God damn it.
You contributed to the opening weekend numbers.
Because I would like to retitle this movie Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, sure.
Caribbean 3 at Wit's End, because I didn't know which way was left when I watched this thing.
Okay.
And I saw one and two, and I saw two twice, and I thought that it was good, fair. Fair to good. And I thought one was very good. This just friggin' confused me.
Okay. Now, your opinion
is
the majority. Okay. No, it completely matters.
I get it.
It's the majority. You're a bastard. No, your opinion is the majority.
Okay.
Most people, as far as like critics and reviewers would go, agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
The movie was too long, they would say.
I don't mind long movies.
The story was convoluted, they would say.
I don't mind convoluted stories.
There was too much going on in the film, they would say.
Goings on is what makes movies.
So what is your problem with the film then?
I couldn't even the characters were confused. You know, there was like two or three incidents where there's two characters talking and then they suddenly stop the conversation and realize we're confused. We've got to rethink this entire strategy. And it's not what we thought it was. And it's like, start over. And I was like, you know, I'm with them. I'm with the two guys guarding the heart of Davy Jones.
Yeah, but those guys are blubbering idiots. They've been blubbering idiots from the first film.
But it's not like it didn't happen at the meeting at the barrier reef. What the hell do you call that thing? A sandbar. There's a sandbar in the middle that they conveniently happen to convene upon. And they get confused there, too.
Outside of Shipwreck Cove?
Is that where that was?
That was outside of Shipwreck Cove.
Because I was confused about where Shipwreck Cove is.
Apparently.
I thought I was on Lost.
Well, it's not that big of an island.
You know, but it's weird. I still kind of like the movie.
Good. I'm glad to hear that you liked it.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you my opinion, though.
This is what I wanted to hear the whole time I watched it.
Not only did I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I did.
Yeah.
But I expected to enjoy it, so I'm slightly biased. But that's okay. I completely and totally disagree with everybody who says that it is convoluted and that it mostly makes no sense. In my opinion, they tied up every single loose end that they started in the first film in this movie. They left nothing undone with this movie. Everything was pieced together by the end of the film.
It was. I think it was. I mean, I'm no expert in this field.
Okay.
But when it comes to the Pirates movies, I was satisfied with all of the storylines. Some of them I remember, and to be quite honest, I don't even friggin' remember the storylines now. But I remember having the feeling of satisfaction when it happened.
Okay, well, that's right? Good.
So, yeah, I think you're right. But Davy Jones and Calypso and... First of all, did Davy Jones come in the second one, right?
He was in the second one.
Was there mention of him in the first one?
They mentioned Davy Jones' locker in the first one.
Okay,
but they never actually mentioned Davy Jones himself.
So does Jack Sparrow have the debt to Davy Jones in the first one, and they speak of it?
They don't speak of it in the first one. They speak of it in the second one.
Okay.
Davy Jones tells him that he has a price to pay, and the price was that he pulled the Black Pearl up from the bottom of the ocean floor and put Jack in command of it, made Jack captain of the Black Pearl. He would have 13 years to be captain of the Black Pearl before he would have to serve his debt to Davy Jones, which would be 100 years of servitude.
Okay.
Okay. But he also, but then if you, there was a little witty banter back and forth where Jack says, well, technically, I haven't had the ship for 13 years, and that's because Barbossa took it over and marooned him on an island. That's what we learned in the first film. And Davy Jones says, well, you still have been introducing yourself as Captain Jack Sparrow all these years.
Right.
And so that's the resolution of, well, not the resolution, but that's the loophole, I guess, in Davy Jones' eyes.
Okay. Can you explain to me how to play the game that is played in the second one? With the dice and the calling people's bluffs and the two sixes and the 9-4s and the...
I
couldn't even understand
it. It's a bluffing game.
What?
Each person has a certain number of dice. I believe it's...
You can really
explain four. I believe it's four dice. Each person has four dice. You get to see what dice you have, but what nobody else has. And you have to guess how many of something are on the table. So, for example, you have your four dice, you lift it up, and you see four sixes on your four dice. You could say, there are four sixes on the table. Someone can call your bluff. Okay, so. But you would lose.
I think I would win, because there's like absolutely no chance you got four sixes.
Hey, the odds are potentially in my favor.
Okay, thank you. You've actually opened my eyes. But I'm just talking about in terms of when you're watching the movie.
Right.
Even though I know what the game is, mm-hmm. I was slightly confused, even with that part. And that was the second one. And the third one, I was thinking the whole time, this is just like the dice game. I'm confused.
Okay.
But listen, I'm not the brightest guy I know, but I'm also not the dumbest. And I was confused, and I'll be honest about that.
Okay.
But I still did like the movie. I think it had the action. I think, except for Keira Knightley, the acting is good.
Okay.
I think she's really bad.
Okay.
I mean, I'm very hard on the women.
Right.
Huh. And by that, I mean critical. On the women in most of these movies, you know,
right.
Batman and Superman and all these movies. I think she's really bad. You know the part where they're kind of getting ready to interrogate her and they're telling her to, you know, show all that she's got under her little kimono or dress or whatever that is. And she's making these faces like, well, this is all I have. I'm cute. This is all I have. I wanted to smack her in the face. And I'm not a misogynist. I'm not aggressive most of the time.
Most of the time.
And, you know, I just couldn't. It was just bad acting for me.
There's one part where I really wanted to just punch her too. Just punch her and kind of hope that she gets hurt by it a little bit.
When? I'm curious.
It's the scene where she's on the Flying Dutchman, and she's getting ready to escape the Dutchman with her Singapore crew of pirates.
Right.
And the character Norrington is helping her to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And she's getting ready to climb the ropes.
Yeah.
And Norrington shoots the rope to save her and the rest of the crew.
One hell of a shot with a musket, that Norrington.
One hell of a shot. From that far to hit a thin rope.
Okay.
But, suspension of disbelief, it is a pirate movie, and there are undead things with barnacles on
wasn't
their face.
Wasn't that far
you
either.
Know.
All right.
But that part where she's, like, falling in the water, and she's like, James! I really just wanted to hit her. It's like, you whiny bitch. Just fucking swim already. Will you please?
The guy's giving his life for you. He's about to get stabbed by an undead barnacle guy with a seahorse. What do they call those things? Starfish.
And
for
really,
face.
She's just a whore. She's just giving it out to anybody who'll get online. To Jack, to Will, to Norrington. She might have given it to Davey if, you know, she saw what other tentacles he had. That's all I'm saying.
All right, so Calypso. What the hell happens at the end when they bring Calypso back from human form?
They free her from her human form.
But when I want to know what she says when she gets really giant and turns into a million crabs.
She doesn't say anything in translatable English. It was in another language.
In the theater, it was completely inaudible. I couldn't even understand what was going on.
It was
all bass.
It's mumbling. I think the bass had purpose. And
I
you
thought
know
she
that.
Had,
I'm not going to explain it to you, you son of a bitch. But
I want answers.
I know you want answers.
And that for me was not an answer.
But you know, when I saw the movie the second time with my wife, every time Tia Dalma, Calypso, spoke, Kate looks at me and goes, what the hell did she just say?
Yeah, it's hard to understand.
What the hell did she just say every single time?
It's hard to understand all of them in a sense, though. And if you're not really paying attention or you're not, some of the words they use, are a little bit complicated for the kids that are there.
Sure.
Not to mention the opening scene in terms of kids.
I don't think that it's a kids movie, with that opening scene.
There were six kids behind me, and after that opening scene, one of the kids turned and said to his dad, so are they all dead? And I was like, I'm just going to, you know, ignore this kid and hope that the dad handles this the right way.
How old was that kid that they hung?
Hey, kid could sing, though.
Oh, he could sing. He had pipes on him. Well, what was he, like 6, 8, maybe?
I didn't understand why they were singing, even after the fact. I guess they're kind of attributing that to some sort of pirate lore that the friends of pirates or sympathizers of pirates are going to sing when this event occurs.
I think there's some sort of mysticism that's supposed to be there, because even if you remember when Barbossa Jeffrey Rush meets South Feng Chow Yun Fat for the first time, he hands him the coin and he puts the coin to his ear
and
he's supposed to imply
ring.
That he hears the ring, and it's supposed to imply the song. I think there's a certain amount of mysticism there, but I think really what it does is, or the impression that I got, is that they're expanding the definition of pirate here, and they're not meaning it just in its traditional sense, because I don't think all of those people were pirates in, or what me and you would think of as a traditional pirate, you know, on a ship taking over other ships. I think it's thieves and beggars, and they even say that in the song. So I think they're kind of just expanding upon that, and maybe pirates, traditional pirates, are supposed to be like, the heroes of thieves and beggars, of the downtrodden, of the poor.
When you saw that part, did you think that it was any kind of socio-political commentary for current day situations? Not to get too goddamn serious here, but I did. I really felt that this was almost blatant, that this was kind of like, you know, anti-Patriot Act, anti-terrorism.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the entire movie is about, I think the entire, all of them are really about that, because when you look at it, when you look at it from that perspective, you're going to step back from the movie itself and take a look at the meaning of the story. It's really about government oppressing freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in its base sense, pirates represent freedom on the seas, and the government is Norrington and Beckett and trying to oppress them and stop them from doing what it is they want to do and taking away whatever freedoms they may or may not have based on what they are. So really, from that standpoint, sure, it is. Of course it is.
As is exhibited by Elizabeth's rousing speech from the side of the ship.
Right.
When she becomes captain or king of the dorks.
King of the pirates.
Or whatever she is.
I like to call her Mel Gibson in Braveheart, but yeah.
Seriously. When you're writing something, and you're a writer for a movie, and it's a big movie, it's not like some little, you know, student film, you can't have a character go up there and yell freedom. The only thing that people will think of is that speech that Mel Gibson has in Braveheart. And I was almost laughing. That almost made me laugh as much as, no, in the third Star Wars.
Yeah, well, that was terrible. But, oh my God, mannequin. But, you know, little scenes like that were definitely ridiculous and out of place. But I think that in some way, shape, or form, whether it was intentional or not, what it did was it brought back some of the fun to the film, because you laughed at it. Because it was almost so silly and ridiculous that you had a little chuckle, whether audible or to yourself.
Yeah.
And so it brought the level of seriousness that the film was peaking at down a little bit. And again, intentional or not, it just, that was the feeling that I got. You know, another weird feeling that I got after watching this movie and thinking about it, and I've spoken about this about 100 times, because pretty much everybody I know has asked me about this movie, because I'm completely and totally obsessed with pirates, as most of you know. And so they all want my opinion and what I think about it. And I said,
I did.
I think the most bizarre feeling I had was, I guess it was probably the next day after seeing The Midnight Show. I was kind of thinking about the characters and stuff like that. And I have something to say about a couple of them in a second. But
please do.
I realized that really, for 3 films, as a collective audience, we are rooting for the worst of the worst. We're rooting for thieves and murderers and really the scum of the earth. But it doesn't feel that way.
Because it's like a Disney movie.
But no, but like in the first movie, in the very first one, when Barbossa first comes to Port Royal, right? They just ransack the town, and they're shooting villagers, and they're killing kids, and they're killing townsfolk.
And it looks like fun.
It looks great. And you're like, this is what a pirate movie is, right?
Yeah.
And then by the third film, you're like, yeah, Barbossa, you're a good guy. But he's a murderer.
Well, he comes back as a good guy.
I don't get why he comes back.
It's not
like a come back from the dead thing, up is down.
Only Barbossa can travel into the ice cave.
Let me tell you about Barbossa. Barbossa?
Yeah.
My favorite character from all 3 films.
I knew it. Well, I had a strong suspicion that that was the case.
I think he really developed into a better character and a better pirate than Jack was. Don't get me wrong. Jack had his strong points, obviously, and he was a driving force, obviously. But I think Barbossa really was, I think he was probably the best acted character. But Jeffrey Rush is an amazing actor.
Yeah, he was good. He was good.
But I think just everything about him was really well handled. And I think I enjoyed his storyline the most. Right up to the end where he steals the pearl again from Jack. It's, you know, spoiler alert. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just really liked Barbossa. I was really excited, as you know, at the end of the second film when he made his little cameo. Yeah. But I was really excited for him in the third movie. I thought he was really well handled.
What else did you like?
I liked that Will Turner, Orlando Bloom, and Elizabeth Swann, Keira Knightley, I felt that they actually had purpose in this third movie. I thought the first 2 movies, they were kind of like, It was a sappy love story. Yeah. I mean, there was some action, and obviously there were some plot devices and whatnot, but really overall, I could care less about them. I thought they actually had purpose in this film. You know, Orlando Bloom actually was driven to rescue his father and somehow salvage his relationship with Keira Knightley. Keira Knightley was, I think Keira Knightley's purpose was to really become a full-fledged pirate. You get that impression a little bit from her in the first film because she's obsessed and fascinated with them, but I think it finally comes to fruition by her becoming the Pirate King in the third film. And I hate the term Pirate King, by the way, but I don't want to get too
King
far into that.
King of the Squirrels.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. But I thought that was really good. I also enjoyed the fact that the third film didn't revolve around Jack nearly as much. There were large chunks of the movie. I mean, outside of the opening 20 minutes. But there were large pieces of the movie that there was no Jack.
Yeah, it was
no
like
Jack Sparrow at all.
A strong cameo almost.
Yeah.
There was a lot of them in some action. And there was a lot in that kind of psycho babble world.
Right.
Davy Jones's locker.
But,
you know, he was kind of strewn throughout the story rather than having it focus on him.
And I think that was a good choice. I think that kind of helped save the character a little bit. I think it helped progress him from getting even more ridiculous than he had progressed in the second film. Because he really was kind of nutty in the second film compared to the first film. The Keith Richards cameo was nice. I could have done without him playing the guitar.
I didn't really get what his position in relation to the council or to the whatever you call the meeting of the nine was. Like, he's Jack's father, I get it.
Right.
And they said he's the guy who decides. What was his name? Do you remember his name?
Captain Teague.
You would remember his name. Oh, that's a famous pirate name. Yeah. Okay.
His purpose, the only purpose that they allude to in the film is that he is keeper of the code.
Yeah.
He's the guy, and he's like the be all and send all. Be all and whatever. That's his primary purpose.
Can't fool me again.
Yeah, exactly. Sea turtles, mate. I fucking hated that line, by the way. But
that was the "we're doomed."
Yeah,
or the
bad feeling about this.
Or the bad feeling about this. Yeah.
I went back and I was kind of interested to know if there was any further story development with him, because there's been a lot of pirate stuff outside of the movies. There's a couple of games. There's some kids' novels and stuff like that. So I wanted to know if they had developed that character. And pretty much the only thing that I was able to gather on him was that he was a member of the original council.
Oh, I see.
And he resigned from the council to take over the position of keeper of the code. That was about the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of him being Jack's father, that's it. It was interesting. I thought Jack looked like him in some way, shape, or form. Again, I thought the guitar was kind of a campy homage to
I have a feeling
Keith
that
Richards.
There may have been a little bit more of him during shooting that didn't make it to the final reel for some reason.
Well, if he was sober or conscious, maybe. I mean, it is Keith Richards.
I mean, they made kind of a big thing about it, and I thought he was going to be a character
right.
that had more to do with the plot than he did.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I was fine with the position that he played.
Yeah, to be honest with you, he had like three lines, if it was three lines, and all three of them were delivered terribly and awfully, and I think that if he had any more than he would have, I'd probably have been angry.
I had the lurking suspicion that he was going to die while speaking, and he was not going to be violently killed in any way. He was just going to keel over.
Just keel over? Yeah. It could have been. The look on his face certainly indicated that it was a possibility.
So, aftermath.
Did you stay for after the credits?
No, but I was about to ask you. All right, let's talk about this. Aftermath in terms of a spinoff or Pirates 4, yay or nay?
Okay. Before I get to what happens at the end of the film, let's talk a little bit about what Disney and the production crew have said about this.
Do it.
Disney has said that they would consider it. Jeffrey Bruckheimer and Gore Verbinski had said that they would consider it. Johnny Depp said he does not want to give up the character.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they've all said that they want to take a break from the character. And they want to take a break from the franchise, which I think is good. I think they need to step away from it for a little bit, let it simmer, let the pirate craze settle a little bit. And then maybe in a couple of years, consider revisiting it. They certainly set it up for another story, whether it be about just Jack and going for the Fountain of Youth or not. But, I mean, you could theoretically follow all the characters.
Yeah, I do like his motivation that he wants to be remembered. He wants to live forever. It's one of those, you know, tested themes that you see in a lot of stories. And that's given to Jack, and I think that's one of the strongest themes in the story, and a lot stronger than the campy love story between the two kids.
And this would be his third attempt at trying to achieve that immortality.
Right, so it makes a lot of sense.
Right, so it does work as a perfect plot device. for those of you who came up to me and said, I didn't think there'd be anything after the credits, to you I say, you're an idiot. And no offense if you, Fantastic, didn't think there'd be anything. But there was something after the first film.
No, I really had
There
to
was
pee,
something after so. The second film.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't there be after the third film? It really only makes sense. So that being said, let's talk about it real quick.
What was it? I don't even know.
It's 10 years in the future.
Oh.
10 years later.
Yeah.
And you see Elizabeth Swann standing on some sort of rocky shore with some sort of house or something behind her. And out walks a young child that you have to assume is hers.
Because we saw the boots scene.
Right. I mean, yeah, they were knocking boots, all right.
Yeah.
She's one sexy bitch. I'm sorry. And and the kid looks like he's kind of sad. And she looks like she's kind of sad. And at first I'm thinking to myself, oh, we're going to get to see Will come back. This is his 10-year visit.
Right.
But actually it's the exact opposite. You actually see Will sailing away.
Ah.
So he had just been there, I guess, probably meeting his child for the first time,
Clever.
Seeing Elizabeth for the first time since the last time on the beach, and he sails off into the sunset, and that's where it ends. So, I mean, they set up some sort of further story for them. Although, to be honest with you, they could probably retire those characters if they were to bring back the movies.
Yeah.
They don't need those characters anymore.
No, they should.
I could see them bringing Barbossa back, because I could see Jack wanting the pearl again. But even if they don't, I mean, Jack is the only one you really need, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
That's it.
It was good for me. How was it for you?
It was. I saw it twice.
Keep
it
clean.
It was excellent. Oh, I'll keep it clean. All right.
All right.
But let's talk about before the movie.
What was before the movie?
You
want
to talk about that trailer?
Yeah. Every time you talk about Transformers on the show, I really don't care.
Right.
I mean, I see the images and I really don't care. I saw this trailer. And I think it looks fucking awesome.
See? I told you.
I mean, really awesome. I saw the figures going in. I was over at Target before I went there, and I saw the protoform figures.
Right.
I think that's what they call them.
Mm-hmm.
Of Optimus and Starscream.
Right.
Slightly quizzed by the fact that it's not Megatron, and I guess Megatron is not going to be the main villain in the movie, or he's not going to be the villain that you see all the time.
No.
I don't know. I don't even want to know. Don't tell me.
I won't.
I'll wait for the movie.
Okay.
But, I think it looks awesome.
I think it looks really, really good. I really do. I think, I mean, first of all, the inclusion of the transforming sound in the trailer finally was really nice.
Oh my God, that's the best.
You get a little excited when you hear it. They actually show a couple of transformations pretty crisply. I think that looks pretty good. I was a little confused by Bumblebee in the trailer. Not going to lie to you.
What is he?
He's a Camaro.
Uh-huh.
But everything that I had read was that he was supposed to be the new Camaro, and he was supposed to be going to buy this sharp new car, and you know that's one of the reasons why they didn't make it something crappy like a Bug.
Yeah,
you know, even if Volkswagen had a problem, they could have still made it something shitty. But it's a beat up fucking Camaro. I mean, it's beat up, right? It looks like a piece of just scuff marks, and it looks like trash. It doesn't look like it's not shiny. And he's buying it from Bernie Mac, the shadiest of used car salesmen. I mean, I'm gonna get them kids. I mean, really, it's terrible. It's just terrible.
Oh, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful beat up piece of American muscle.
Yeah, but I'm just confused by it. I like it. Don't get me wrong. I like it. I think it works better with the story. But whatever. I think it looks great. I think the Starscream transformation still looks badass.
That looks awesome. He's kind of like, he goes from zero to
whatever,
Mach 3 or whatever the hell you call it. He just kind of jumps in the air, turns into a plane, and bam, takes off. Yeah, it's got me excited.
I'm pretty jazzed. But I think that's it. I think we can wrap it up.
That's all I got, baby.
That's all I got. Why don't we take a little break, and we'll come back and wrap the show up real nice in a package with a bow.
Give me a sign. Hello out there. Everyone in Geekland, yeah, that's you. I mean you. This is Daddy Fantastic, that's right. You know, Mr. Fantastic's father. I know you didn't think he had any relatives, but he does. I've been thinking, the only way Mr. Fantastic is ever going to get out of that basement of mine is if this show really takes off. Yeah, he lives in the basement. We let him out to do the show, but I want him out of there permanently. So what's Mrs. Fantastic and I need you to do is visit the iTunes store and subscribe to Big Kev's Geek Stuff. That's Big Kev's Geek. Yeah, you know what I mean. Big Kev's Geek Stuff. You do that by typing Geek Stuff. I know that's a little strange, but it's Geek Stuff into the search field. And then you hit some keys, and before you can say David Copperfield, you're there. It's unbelievable. It's just something really that's fantastic. Yeah, that's right. Daddy Fantastic. Also, don't forget to visit the website on the internets. The address is big. It's very big, this address. It's just so long to get it out. It's Big Kegs. What's the guy's name? Would you please tell me? What's his name? Big Kev, that's it. I knew it. BigKevsGeekStuff.com. You can't miss it. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll see you next week. It's not time to make one more thing. I messed up before. If you would like to hear more Big Kev's Geek Stuff, email eric.logan@xmradio.com. Don't forget.
And that is it for episode 59 of Big Kev's Geek Stuff. The show must go on. Matt, take us out here.
We talked about some really good stuff tonight. Some really good movie stuff, not so good DVD stuff, some decent toy stuff, Pirates and Transformers. I think it was an exciting episode. I had an exciting week. We'll have Kev back next week. Remember, if you want to let us know what you thought about the episode, or if you have any questions or comments, any corrections perhaps, you can do that. You can drop us an email at bigkevsgeekstuff@gmail.com, or you can go to myspace.com/bigkevsgeekstuff and leave us a message there.
And even if you're not a fan of Microsoft in any way, like me, check out microsoft.com/surface and dream of the gaming possibilities.
It is awesome. And that's it. We'll see you next week.
And on that note, we cue the music.